Hello, and welcome to the Business Decisions Podcast. My name is Stuart Wood, and I'm the CEO of Caravel Law. Every week, we bring you stories and insights from founders, owners, and leaders of great businesses, followed by some thoughts and input from one of Caravel's lawyers. Caravel Law has been a leader in legal innovation in Canada since 2004 and has helped many startups and small businesses overcome challenges as they have scaled and succeeded. Our hope is that these discussions will help existing business leaders and inspire others to start their own ventures. Now, let's get to today's guest. My guest on the podcast today is Ben Baldwin. Ben is the founder of the Founder City Project. Ben is a multiple-time founder himself, most notably with Clearfit. And through the Founder City Project, he has worked with over 1,000 founders, helping them learn from each other and improve the performance of their teams. Now, our goal with the Business Decisions Podcast was to have founders and business leaders share some of their experiences and key decisions to help others who might be facing other similar situations. So Ben's a perfect guest for us. Now, this is a slightly different episode for us as Ben is the only guest this week. We do not feature a Caravel Law lawyer this episode. We spent the extra time with Ben. In the discussion, you'll hear about the story of what inspired Ben to start the Founder City Project, some of the most common challenges that founders are facing, and how much they benefit from being able to speak with others who have gone through the same experiences. And also, why it's so important to focus on improving the performance of teams within a company. I really enjoyed the conversation with Ben, who's a really inspiring guy. And while we don't have the normal intersection with legal issues on this episode, I think there's a lot of helpful information here. So with that, here's my discussion with Ben. All right. My guest on the podcast today is Ben Baldwin. Ben is the founder of the Founder City Project, a coaching platform that helps founders and their teams get support from inside and outside their organizations to grow and succeed. We'll be talking a lot about the Founder City Project on the podcast today, but there's some other things that he's involved with. He is also the co-founder of a consulting company called Scale Driver. He's a board member of the Drucker Institute. He is a mentor at Next Canada and with the Founder Institute. And he's also an ambassador for the C100. Ben also has his own founder experience. Ben created the very first predictive job search engine, which later evolved into the company Clearfit, where he was the founder and co-CEO. And so with that full agenda, I'm really appreciative of your time today, Ben. Thank you for joining us on the podcast.
My pleasure. Thank you, Stuart.
So tell us a little bit about the Founder City Project. I think there's a lot of overlap between what you're trying to do there and what we're trying to do with this podcast. So I'm really excited to hear about the Founder City Project.
Sure. So it started as a bit of an accident, really. So I had started Scale Driver, which is a company that, as you mentioned, a consulting company, but we use founders instead of consultants to help really big companies make better decisions about innovation. So by sharing experiences that founders have actually used, and that helps to protect those big company execs against making bad decisions because they're actually talking to people who are experienced in building that type of innovation. So it's less risky for them. So in building out the stable of founders, I kind of started at 20 and then it grew to 60 and then it became unmanageable. So I built systems around that. And it evolved into its own company and organization that became the Founder City Project, which was supposed to just be a project, but it grew to over 500 founders in the first, roughly year and a half, 2 years.
What was the motivation for founders to get involved with Scale Driver to assist other founders?
Someone else's problem. You get to work beside a prominent founder. Like we work with, so it's founders and innovators at Scale Driver. So we, it could be like one of the prominent founders from Toronto or someone from the US who's built a big company, like scaled it to go public or like a chance to work in parallel with each other because they don't like meet each other on the street and go for coffee just for the heck of it. They usually get together to solve challenges. And in this case, it's not theirs. So it's an interesting dynamic.
And you find founders are excited to have the chance to talk to other people about their problems?
Absolutely. It's like catnip.
Yeah, it is pretty fun.
Yeah. But the so as I was building the this as I said, this kind of stable of founders, it every single person, every one of the founders is trained on how to communicate with one another in a way that's very confidential, reliable, and in a way that's non-judgmental. Mm-hmm. So they end up supporting each other. And it's really cool. So they have the founders themselves as a group, and this is just Toronto. I mean, I think the number of founders is over 800, getting close to 900 founders just in Toronto. They end up finding each other. And the program itself has evolved from just founders, because I'm a founder, I'm a crazy founder. Mm-hmm. But I realized that my blind spot and a lot of other founders' blind spots are just through working with all these founders and look at the data that I had in my system. It's like, it's the people who are not like the founders is the blind spot. It's the people who are like Apple says that they have like 30% of the people on any given team are the I guess I can't remember what their terminology is, but they're kind of founder like a little bit nuts. Mm-hmm. And then 70% are like stable, and they may not want to rule the world, but they're the ones who actually make sure that stuff happens, keep track of. They're the core of the team. Mm-hmm. And that's what I found is a big blind spot for founders. So what Founder City, I mean, it's called Founder City, mm-hmm. Has evolved to is a network for teams.
Okay.
So a way for those teams to work better together, as you mentioned, and make it really, really easy for whether you're a founder, whether you're on that team, whether you're leading that team, to succeed at being a team and also succeed at your career. Because as a team grows or a company grows, so does your career. And that's a really big, very, very important thing.
What do you mean by those people are a blind spot for the founders? Is it what motivates those people or what training and development they need? Or what is it the blind spot about?
I'll speak from my own experience. It's mm-hmm. just, I don't understand when people aren't like me.
Okay.
Right? Like, I'll just get up and change my mind. Or I'll, in the middle of a thought, as you'll probably experience during this podcast, change my train of thought or forget what question I was asking. So I can be very set in one path and then change really quickly. And it's probably really annoying, but it's helped me find solutions that others maybe didn't find. But that's also my weakness, is that it's the same thing. So I need to surround myself with this other type of person who's quite different from me.
And the blind spot that you're trying to then help with these teams is that the teams are not performing to their full capability because those members of the team are not getting what they need from the experience?
Yeah. So what I've found in teams is that people need to feel comfortable enough to rely on each other. That's the key thing. Mm-hmm. So a concept that I use is I call it up-teaming. So if you're going to elevate the level of teamwork within your team, what needs to happen is people need to be able to understand each other, not just trust, but like understand where, who they are and where they come from so that they can rely on their differences. So not just be inclusive, but actually start to rely on the things that someone else can do that you can't do. And then that's when teams really start humming. And it's what makes people happy, frankly, is when other people rely on you. And when you rely on other people for the stuff that you either don't like doing or don't want to do, and they're better at it. It feels awesome. I think if anybody's, you know, either played or been on a team where that happening, where like, you know.
And so you mentioned that you have a lot of data on this stuff now through Founder City Project Experience. What sort of data are you seeing on teams and the way that poor performing teams or teams that are not optimized are having on the performance of a company?
Well, I've been finding, and this is through confidential surveys of the people who've been through the program, that they're 50% more productive, over 60% more likely to avoid big, big, big mistakes, which is a big one. So you learn from other people's mistakes. We have roughly 10% of the employees who go through the program are promoted within 30, 60 days. So it's cool. It's like this change of mindset. So what I've found is, you know, stuff that's not easy to measure, but it gives people confidence, whether it's a founder talking to the board or whether it's a team more confident in trusting one another or working together. And I don't know, that's the real reward. It's hard to measure that. Like, one of the big things is alignment. So alignment we can improve. It's looking like 25 percent plus improvement in productivity from just slight improvements in alignments. And then there's momentum, which is really, really important for teams. It's important for companies when they're raising capital. Like the venture capitalists will ask, like, what's this momentum like? But it's really important within a team if there's momentum. Like your momentum is basically the mass that you have, like what you're capable of and what you want to do, and then how quickly you're moving through the world or taking that mass and your velocity. Like, how are you growing as a group every month and then also individually? So that's the key component, is hyper personal individual momentum creation. That's why people work, right? They want to, whether it's learning, they want to feel like they're progressing, like their purpose is like they want to grow as a person.
Yeah, for sure.
So, and then together the team benefits from that. So they kind of have this interesting relationship.
So in terms of the teams, the founders are learning from other founders, mm-hmm. and then they're bringing some of that experience back to their teams, or are they completely separate experiences, the founders that are working together with other founders and then working with their own teams internally?
Founders can bring back, like basically the way that it works is people share experiences. So founders can share experiences with their team. Team leaders can share experiences with their team. And the coolest experiences, and this was a surprise for me, is when, let's say, a team leader is challenged. Yeah. And then the team members actually share their experience about how they have solved related challenges in the past or how they've worked at their best. And it's really neat to see because there's a lot of relevance there, even though they may be at totally different levels. But where all this started, to your point, is where founders share their experience with one another, like how they did it in the past.
What are some of the more common challenges that founders are coming to other founders with and saying, I really need help with X, Y, and Z?
Well, all of the challenges that founders have, first off, are totally confidential. Mm-hmm. So a lot of, when I ask a founder and there's sort of a first layer of challenge that they're working on, whether it's actually more people related, not usually fundraising related. It's like, how do I manage a team? And then it's, am I the right person to manage a team? Or existential, like, should I be doing this? Or I've stopped liking my job and I'm the founder of this company. Like, do I change? Does the company change? What's wrong with me? Is this normal? Like, all of that stuff is really tough to deal with because you don't have anybody to talk to about that. You're going to phone your venture capitalist and say, I don't know. I'm just not feeling this. I just don't want to.
Yeah. Is that a really common problem?
Oh yeah. Yeah. So you you feel stuck or you have so many people chirping in your ear that you start to believe the chirps, even though you don't intend to. Mm-hmm. So founders say, me too. Like, they get into this environment where they end up being able to trust one another with their deepest, darkest, most threatening, vulnerable thoughts.
Because they know the other person's going through the same sort of things.
Yeah, because, I mean, everybody's trained, so it doesn't happen naturally. Yeah. So there is a specific format that earns trust from other people. And so they feel more comfortable sharing with you.
So you train them on how to interact with each other before they start to interact with each other.
Yes.
So I would think it would take a lot to get a founder comfortable with sharing their deepest, darkest secrets with other founders. There's a certain amount of like external reputation that they'll want to manage, right?
Right. But if they get the, like, there's a lot there.
Yeah.
There's a lot behind the scenes. So they really want to in most cases. Some it takes a little bit longer to open up, but I found that often it can happen in as like 30 minutes or an hour. But they need to be able to trust, like they need to know that the other people in the room are either you earn trust. So there are little experiences that people can share that kind of test the water. And if other people are vulnerable together,
yeah,
then that tends to earn trust when everybody sort of gradually reveals together.
And so is your experience that's common, that founders don't really have someone to talk to?
Yes.
And that's a common sort of challenge.
For sure.
I've got these things and I would really like to talk to somebody about them, but I don't know who I can possibly.
Yeah. Whether things are going terribly or you think they're going terribly and they're not, which is common, or you're kicking butt, and in your mind, you're not. So it doesn't matter how well you're doing, how big your company is, these sort of thoughts, like, I haven't found anybody where they don't exist.
So a lot of founders have imposter syndrome?
For sure. Yeah. Especially as they go through different layers of the organization.
Yeah.
Either imposter, or they aren't even at the imposter because they don't know what they're what they're supposed to be.
Yeah, there you go.
So they just feel uncomfortable because, you know, should I go back to writing code? Because I don't understand
how that
sales team works. Yeah. So they know they're good at that, because when people are under pressure, they tend to, like, if you think of anybody thinks of themselves, they tend to revert to what they're best at.
Yeah.
And that's not the way it works for founders. They have to completely, like, they have to change their, like, reaction, and it's hard to do.
So what are the outcomes that people are hoping for when they go through sort of an upteaming coaching program with you?
Well, there are a couple. And then there's one big one, sort of overall outcome. The most important thing to know as far as outcomes is the customer for upteaming is the employee. So the employees have to want to do this. It has to be the most valuable, the team members. And we're talking teams of generally like 6 to 15 people. So, and it could be an engineering team, it could be a senior leadership team, it could be a product team, it could be a sales team. It doesn't matter what type of team, but we specialize, because we can pick, in teams of founder-led companies. So they're usually communication, or like there's something either special or frustrating, whichever way you look at it, within these teams. But the outcomes that they get is that you can actually measure are alignment and momentum. And you measure that on a very individual basis, because the reason people work on teams, although they love the team, is because they want to progress their career. They want to learn. They want to become like a different, like they want to grow as a person. Mm-hmm. So what we do is we help people grow as a person in the same direction. So the team ends up winning, because the teams are, you know, sort of a cycle. The people progress, the team progresses, and then the team magnifies their career performance. So it creates a loop. So we call that momentum. So there's career momentum and there's team momentum, and it grows. We can measure that.
How long do you usually work with a team for?
Well, it's pretty new. So far, like, I think we launched like 4 months ago with our first cohort. So I wanted to make sure that it was consistently something that, as I said, like an employee would want to do, right?
Yeah.
Every month, and not just be like another meeting. People don't really like meetings. So this has to be a way where if you invest an hour, you're saving like 3 hours. It's the only way I'd want to do this. Mm-hmm. So far I'd say 4 months out of the 4 months we've been doing this, but they, you know, at least 6 months, probably a year, it should be a system that they can get as much or as little help with as they want. But we measure all the outputs. So, you know, they'll be more aligned and they'll be more productive at the end, or we wouldn't do it.
This question's coming a little bit from my own startup experience. Mm-hmm. Are you finding that startups actually have put some money aside in their budget for training and development of their teams?
No, they do not. What they put money aside for, and there are a whole bunch of reasons behind it, is often recruiting.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you raise a bunch of money, whether it's $1 million, $1 is a lot. I mean, $1, $1 million, you know, the $50 million, what you realize let's say you're a founder, is you have to show that you're doing something with that money. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that validates your innovation, your company, you're going in the right direction, you can hire people who want to work on your stuff.
Right.
Sometimes it goes sideways where it's the wrong type of person, or that person comes to your team and they're like, whoa, this is not what you said, you crazy founder. I mean, it happens all the time.
Right.
So what we've realized is that the fulcrum for your talent is your team. So your team performing allows you to more easily find those performers and have them actually perform on your team. So if you don't have that, then you've got a bit of a challenge. So The problem with that is the budget that should really be funding a lot of this is that recruiting budget. So we work with our clients, and actually what we've done is just keep the price super low so that anybody, it's like a no-brainer. So that's the way we treat it. If you don't have a budget for it, we make it a no-brainer because it's riskier to not do it.
And do you provide them with insights that would help them identify these are the right sorts of people who you should be looking to hire who will fit in well with your teams and perform well?
Absolutely, because you see it within your team. Mm-hmm. And then those same skills that you're using to analyze your own team, you start to see in people who are not in your team. And it's where I've had companies that work with hiring before.
Yeah.
What tends to go sideways in those situations is you imagine hiring someone, but that's not what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to imagine someone working at your company, imagine them on a bad day, on a good day, like put aside the process of hiring. It's like, what are they going to do? Like, who are they within this team? So by starting with the team, it's very helpful. Analyzing the team, understanding the behaviors there, it's easier to see those behaviors outside and then think about the recruiting component or hiring component on top of that. So yes, you'll see metrics within the team and you'll start to see that on people outside the team. You can also measure against that.
Yeah. So you're drawing on your own past and experiences here.
Yeah. 100%.
Exactly.
But what I found is that people would hire great people, and then the team, they expect that like they'd be their savior for these teams. And then the person comes in, it's like, I'm not going to be your savior. And they say, yeah, whatever. This person's our savior.
Yeah.
And
I have some experience there.
Yeah. And it's not the job they thought it would be. Right. And the team is like, I don't know. It's tricky. I mean, it's supposed to be tricky.
Yeah. It's supposed to be hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. In terms of the other experiences, do you bring a lot of your own experiences in your past as a founder and the other sort of, I went through at the beginning of the podcast, mm-hmm. the list of organizations you're connected with. So you're mentoring a bunch of organizations and now you're doing this. Are you trying to bring some of your own experiences and some of what you've learned and share it with the ecosystem kind of thing?
Sort of. So the Founder City project is about whether it's the founders or the teams. I think that if I have a relevant experience, I'll share it with someone, but it's often someone else who does. Mm-hmm. So it's matching those different experiences. So Stuart, if you're going through something, it's very specific. The way, like, there are, like, I think around 1,300 people who are in this program, they're constantly sharing the challenges that they're going through every month. So I know who's working through what or who just worked through something, mm-hmm. whether it's a peer or someone who's a little bit more senior. And it's often more relevant than anything I would ever have to share. So everybody speaks from their personal experience. So it's really easy to not feel judged. Mm-hmm. The person's telling you a story about what they did.
But now you're in a situation where you have interacted with, I think it's well over 1,000 founders at this point, right? In terms of the
lots
overall
of brush. Yeah.
How do you feel like you've learned and grown from doing the Founder City project?
The Founder City project exists in my blind spot. So the origin story behind this thing, it goes back to, you mentioned that I joined the board of the Drucker Institute, and it was the first board meeting that I had, and I was so intimidated. I read all the Drucker books again and again and again. And the speaker was, and this is the board's quite small. So the speaker for the board in the finish our board meeting in the afternoon. We're in Claremont, California, in Peter Drucker's old house, which has been turned into a museum. And there are like 18 chairs. So I sit down, I'm like nervous. I sit beside Jim Collins, who wrote Good to Great, mm-hmm. and Built to Last, all these great books. And he looks up at me. He's like, oh, I was just reading your bio. So I said, well, it mustn't have taken you very long. But Jim, it was fascinating because there were only 18 people, but Jim got up in front of everybody and he was nervous. Like, he's a professional speaker. He's like a guru of mine too. And shaking his hand is shaking. He's telling a story about Peter Drucker and his a point in his life where he didn't know what to do, where he was before any of his books. So he didn't know whether he should be an author. He didn't know whether he should be a prof. He didn't know whether he should be a consultant, whatever, rock climber, whatever it was to him. And so he went to go meet with Peter and spewed all this stuff that he'd prepared for 40 minutes. And Peter took his, Peter, this is how he says it. He writes about this experience in the foreword of, he wrote the foreword for the latest edition of Peter Drucker's Effective Executive. And so he talks about this meeting and his story. And so he changed the word slightly, but he goes on for 40, 45 minutes in his recollection. And Peter just grabs his hands. Peter hasn't said a thing, just grabs his hands. And he says, "Jim, just be useful." And so at that moment, I was in the audience and seeing the look on Jim's face, very different from hearing it said or like seeing it written. That was the inspiration for the Founder City Project. It's like my guiding light was just be useful. And the just is key there because it's don't do anything more, right? Like deliver usefulness. Mm-hmm. And it's simple to do it. Just don't make it complicated. So just be useful for me has to this day been a principle that really, really guides what I do. And that led to the second principle that guides the Founder City Project, which is started off as a question like, because I was frustrated with it, like who has a founder's back? Mm-hmm. And the answer is like, nobody. So I felt a certain level of responsibility through getting a lot of confidential information that being useful, the first order usefulness that I can have to founders was to have their backs. So it changed to who has a founder's back. And then I realized that nobody has anybody's back. And I started to really respect these heroic team leaders and team members. Really, really cool as I started to work with more employees and team leaders. It's like nobody has anybody's back really because they're all confused. So it changed to we have your back. So if we engage with you, like anybody, you being even Stuart, we have your back. That's the principle that guides the decisions. And what's good for you is good for me. So even the pricing, it's very easy to explain why it's inexpensive because it's good for you. And then, you know, why we would not be able to go lower because it's really bad for us, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's being simple and useful, but it's hard. And you realize, like, I look back at the other companies that I've worked with and I wasn't just useful. It was more complicated and I overcomplicated things.
The response seems to have been very positive in this market. Where do you intend to take Founder City going forward? Just try to help more and more teams and more founders?
So good question. Founder City has been driven by inbound demand. So it was not supposed to be big. I resisted adding people all through word of mouth. So if anybody gets added, I have to think, do I have their back? Mm-hmm. Really, literally. So now I realize that being useful and having the backs of founders in this ecosystem is helping them in the other ecosystems that they're in, helping them find people who will have their backs as well in those ecosystems. So yes, and there are a couple of markets that have demonstrated some inbound interest. And I just need a critical mass of roughly 25 to 50, usually start with founders and then expand to teams. 25 to 50 founders who are like, I'm in, let's do this kind of all at once to get the ball rolling. Because to match them with all the challenges and share their experience. And they have to be pretty senior founders too. Mm-hmm. So that's what, I mean, I've been busy enough in this market, so I haven't done that yet, but there are a few markets that are next up. Probably 2020, you'll see some new markets.
Well, it's exciting. Yeah. So if someone's interested in learning more about the Founder City Project or Scale Driver or whatever, or looking to get involved, what's the best way for them to get more information or to get in touch?
Well, they can find more information. Actually, my LinkedIn profile is okay. I keep it up to date. So it's,
I can add a link
Ben,
to the
just
podcast,
type yeah. Ben Baldwin in LinkedIn.
Yeah.
You can go to founderscityproject.com for information on the Founder City. You can go to scaledriver.com scalegriver.com for information on ScaleDriver. And that's probably the easiest way.
Perfect. I'll attach links to the show notes on this episode as well. Well, this is fantastic. It's sort of, as I started out saying, what we've been trying to do with the Business Decisions podcast is sort of have people share key business decisions that they made and sort of what led to the places that they ended up and key forks in the road moments kind of thing. So sort of the same idea of how do we share that kind of knowledge with founders and other people who are starting businesses or thinking about it. So I think it's great that you're doing this to have the backs of so many founders out there who need the help. And thank you very much for taking the time to speak with us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Stuart.
I want to thank my guest on the podcast today, Ben Baldwin from the Founder City Project. If you're interested in speaking with Ben and working with him to improve the performance of your teams, you'll find all the links to Ben's work in the show notes. If you'd like more information about this podcast or about Caravel Law, please check us out at caravellaw.com. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, leave us a rating, and share the episode with others that you think might benefit from hearing the conversation. We'll be back next week with another episode, and until then, we hope all of your business decisions are great ones.